Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us here on the program. We come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We are rebroadcast Sundays at 3 p.m. Pacific time on a2zen.fm, as well as archiving these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show page. We certainly hope that you will avail yourself of the smorgasbord we put out for you for 6 years plus, in addition to the other interviews that are available to you on the interviews page. And what's the difference between the archives on the radio show page and the interviews page? The difference is the interviews on the interviews page haven't aired on the radio yet. So you are going to have an opportunity to listen to them before anybody else. So go to richarddugan.com and click on the interviews link, and you can listen to guests who are upcoming. I don't embargo the interviews when I do them. I don't see any reason to do that. The information is just too important to hold it until. And a lot of times, guests whose books haven't come out will not do interviews until that book has come out. And I perfectly understand that. That's the way you ought to do it. Instead of saying, could you embargo this and not release it until, I'm just not going to do interviews until it's released. And I think that's a great way to go. It's great to be with you and come your way every Saturday and have an opportunity to talk with the incredible guests that we have every single week. Today is absolutely no exception. We're going to be talking with the author of Soul Health, S-O-U-L, Soul Health. It is basically aligning with spirit for radiant living. My guest is Dr. Catherine T. Kelly. She is a PhD and an MS PH, and we'll get her to tell us what that's all about. But, Doctor, welcome to our program.
Great. Thank you, Richard. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing quite well. It's nice to have you with us. And I'm noticing that as we are moving through these days, weeks, months, and years, that a focus seems to be coming out in regards to the very thing that we're going to be talking about today, the very thing that your book is about, and that has to do with soul health. I had never really considered beyond the health or wellness of my physical body, my mental state, and my emotional conditions. I had never thought that the soul could be diseased or unhealthy or be having problems. I thought it was separate in that, well, it was my soul. It couldn't be touched, kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And apparently, that isn't quite the case.
Well, and I can explain that even more whenever you're ready.
All right. Well, first of all, tell us about yourself in terms of, I love it when folks use all these wonderful letters from the education that they've achieved, which I think is wonderful. There's a part of me that kind of wishes that I had gone that route, although I don't know which direction, maybe philosophy or comparative religions or something of that nature, specifically because of the nature of this radio program. But you have a PhD as well as an MSPH?
Yes. I do.
Tell us about those.
The PhD is in counseling psychology with an emphasis in health psychology. And actually, I've also done a fair bit of work, I would say, as far as research or exploring the spiritual health through the psychology degree. But then also, the MSPH is a Master's of Science in Public Health. Because I've done a lot of my training in health settings, one of the things that I did during my postdoctoral fellowship was actually earn a Master's of Science in Public Health. So that was in a family medicine department at University of Missouri, where at the time only physicians had gone through that fellowship. And I sort of finagled my way into doing a fellowship with them. And so it is basically a continuation of my interest in health itself. And at that time, I actually did do some research on kind of ideas of spiritual health within medical settings. So that's kind of where all those letters come together.
Now, I also find it interesting, too, that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but spirituality hasn't been a very big part of the care when it came to, if I can use the broad term of mental health and wellness.
Right. And yes and no. And what's fascinating about it is that in modern healthcare, no, it has not. In fact, it's something that's being, to me, reintroduced because in early times, so when You had early healers before any modern healthcare ever existed. Oftentimes in the native cultures, the shamans, the ministering type folks, anybody who had much more of the healing abilities were actually also considered the physicians and the spiritual hosts. So it's actually kind of interesting because in early cultures, it was always the case that it was paired. But as we modernized our ideas of what health was, and like you said, most people consider health to be just physical health.
Mm-hmm.
As we modernized that, it really got squeezed out. And so it's fascinating to me that over the last 15, 20 years, we started to come full circle back to the spiritual aspect of health. And again, I guess I kind of go deeper by calling it soul health, because the book itself is all about how do we pair ourselves both with the human part of our lives, which is what we're all used to because we've separated out the soul, but how do we pair the human part of our lives with kind of reconnecting with that soul part of us, which is, again, in most native cultures, is always a very key part of their existence.
It's kind of an interesting, I'll call it an irony, that we even have to do that because there isn't anything that we aren't closer to.
Absolutely. There's no separation.
It's like, wait a minute. I can understand pairing my Bluetooth earpiece with my phone because they are separate. But
right.
My mind, body, soul, and what have you, emotions, they're all interlaced, interconnected, interwoven.
Yes. I absolutely agree with that. And so, even though soul health is a new term to many, many, many folks,
mm-hmm.
Like you said, it's sort of something that should have been there all along. I love the fact that we're coming full circle to it, and there's lots more research out there on spirituality and health. And many years ago, there was, having taught in medical schools, many years ago, there were very, very few medical schools that ever even touched the subject of spirituality and health. And now, actually, the majority of medical schools at least have some sort of training in spiritual health. And when I say training, it might be an hour workshop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But many of the schools that are out there now at least touch on it to open up and crack that seal again.
Interesting.
Yeah,
now,
it is fascinating.
You use a very interesting word, and for our listeners, listen very, very carefully, because Dr. Catherine Kelly does not work to heal her patients. There's another word that you use.
Yes.
You help them to, and I love this word, we're using it more on this program as well.
Right.
You help them to evolve.
Absolutely.
That is fascinating. To evolve to what, first of all?
Well, I think, first of all, most people consider healing as taking care of the symptom. Whereas I think to me, as a psychologist and I guess a healer in my own form of the word, I believe it's more important to evolve beyond whatever the symptom was, because those symptoms themselves oftentimes have messages to us of something that we can actually learn and grow from and understand for why I call them symptoms of the soul, that anytime there's an emotional cue or a physical cue, oftentimes what it is it's our cue to grow. And whether it's a relationship issue, whether it's a financial issue, whether it's a intellectual issue where, you're tired of your job or you're frustrated with your job or whatever the idea or the situation or circumstance within the human condition that might be creating our dis-ease. Again, I think that those are symptoms, but really, if you break them down, learn to interpret them, and move beyond them, that's, to me, the point of evolution. And I really think that our most natural state as human beings is to evolve. But with our overdeveloped brains, a lot of times we get mired rather than moving forward.
Well, there would be those that would argue with you that the brain is overdeveloped.
Well,
because we keep getting mired in these
right.
things.
Right.
But
yeah.
Be that as it may, without getting into too many semantics here, again, I think it's fascinating because we're talking about the evolution of man on this program. We're talking about where are we going next? What are we going to do next? And it seems to me that what you're talking about in terms of soul health, if we don't deal with that, we're not going anywhere.
Yeah, and in fact, going down back to the physical aspect, you know, scientists have said that for the most part, humans, our bodies have evolved pretty much as they're going to. I mean, we're going to shift our shapes a little bit, but our bodies, for the most part, are going to stay somewhat similar. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, if we are really going to grow as a species, it really is down to our souls, because that part of us is absolutely infinite. And that consciousness, that evolution we talked about, all has to do with our consciousness about how much we can grow and learn and become unmired from whatever we perceive to have us stuck.
Now, is this all tied in with a lot of what was spoken about in the 80s and 90s? That's the 1980s and 90s, folks, in regards to family issues and, oh, mom and dad did this to me. And I mean, back then it was, you know, you were blaming mom and dad for your problems.
Sure.
And then the issues of codependency. And of course, we actually can see sort of the evolution of that thought process over the last 20, 30, 40 years. But is that where we're looking as in terms of where the, we'll call it the dis-ease of the soul began? Or is there another source, if you will?
Oh, gosh, I think there are so many sources of disease. I think many, like you said, would argue that, you know, our parents ruined our lives or whatever. I tend to take a chronically Pollyanna view toward life,
mm-hmm.
that our difficulties and challenges, no matter what they might be, whether it is a parenting issue, whether it's a physical health issue, whether it's, you know, a tornado came through and, you know, demolished a house or whatever, I tend to look at those as opportunities for growth rather than something that is supposed to victimize us, because I think really that victimization is about getting us mired. So part of the evolution, you know, aspect is to look at whatever's happening in our lives and seeing what can help us grow. So again, I'm a little bit chronically Pollyanna-ish about the things that happen to ourselves. Not to say that they're not devastating, but really to the point where if we can search for a different meaning to them, it really helps us realize that there's something that can be taken away from those situations rather than, you know, taken away for better,
mm-hmm.
rather than allowing us to get mired, which I think, unfortunately, a lot of people do.
Now, I'm not even going to begin to try to describe this on the radio, but I am going to tell our listeners that the cover of the book Soul Health is very, very interesting and very unique. And I'm going to have you describe the elements of this. It's the long and the short of it is it's a tree. But it's more than just a tree. As a matter of fact, it's almost a double-trunked tree, and those trunks are the arms coming up to hands and going off to the left and to the right. And then from there, I'm not even going any further. But you have these parts, these six parts and so forth, labeled of this soul health model. Tell us about that.
Yeah, and actually the metaphor of trees have been used for ages for many, many different things. But I also absolutely adore trees. I think the metaphor behind them is so amazing. When I created this model, I really looked at the, quote, branches of health. And as this model developed, I, as a psychologist and also working in a health environment, really started to realize that these 10 branches were emerging as the key parts of life that affect individuals on a day-to-day basis and that they present with in psychotherapy sessions. And so I created each one of these branches of health as key aspects of what we need to learn how to balance and learn about in order to grow. And the trunk itself, which is what you described as the hands and the arms reaching up, what I asked my graphics person to do was come up with something that showed that movement and that kind of urging to grow, which is, again, the hands kind of holding up the other branches of the tree, but the, you know, there's movement in that. And to me, not only is the metaphor of the branches of health important, I'll explain in just a second what the trunk means, but, you know, if you think about trees themselves, they inherently want to grow. You know, if you have a fence that they're near, they're going to grow through it or around it or push it down. you know, they're just going to grow no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
But metaphorically speaking, when we as humans get mired, sometimes we just stop growing. We get stuck. And so the whole idea of this tree is not only to really emphasize the importance of opening us up to grow at any given time, but it's also, going back to that trunk, it's about solidifying and understanding who we are at that deepest level, which to me is knowing your soul. One of the quotes I have in the book is, to know your soul is to know true health. Because when you really get to know your soul, particularly within each one of these 10 branches, you really get to understand what you need to do for your particular tree or life in order to feel that radiance, to feel that balance, to feel that sense that everything is kind of aligned. And the more solid you are in understanding yourself, the more you can weather any kind of storm that comes along. So the trunk part of this tree, and the more you know yourself, is kind of like the mighty oak, where you have this strong base to yourself. And so no matter what comes along, you're going to be able to perceive your life in a much more grounded, healthier way. So this metaphor in this book itself is all about learning what we need to do as humans within each one of these 10 branches, as well as knowing what we need to do as a soul, meaning the evolution part, in order to align us to feel the most solid and vibrant and content and joyful throughout our lives, and knowing that this is a constant process.
Well, there's no question. And the one analogy that I use quite often, especially when people begin to moan and groan and complain, more specifically, and in recent days, about the economy and how it always seems that no matter what the news is, it can be good and it can be bad, they complain. And what I tell people in that regards is that take a look at a tree, and I'll use an oak tree specifically because they really grow slow. If you plant a fast-growing tree and a slow-growing tree, and you grow them in a place where you have both very nice weather and also very severe weather, the tree that's going to be there after most likely the first or second year is going to be the oak tree, because it grows so slowly that it burrows its roots down into the ground deeper and deeper, whereas the fast-growing tree doesn't have the time because it's spending all of its time growing as fast as it can. And so the first winds that come along are going to rip it right out of the ground. So when it comes to our personal growth or the economy's growth or whatever, you know, we want to speak about, wouldn't it be better? I mean, how long do you want this to be around? How long do you want the economy to be around?
Right.
Just till tomorrow? Then go right ahead and have a fast-growing economy. Do you want it to be around in 20 or 40 or 60 or 100 years? Then let it be happy with the 0.1% increase from last year.
Sure.
Be ecstatic about that.
Sure.
Not, oh my God, it's below projections, and forget projections. Right. Look what it did do.
Right.
And I find that that's the case with us when we look at our own personal progress, is we say, oh my gosh, a year ago I was here and now I'm only here. I should be so much. I have to tell you that a conversation I had with my brother when I was 33, which takes me back 20 years, we were at a family reunion, and we were walking out in the desert away from the, I think it was an Elks Lodge where they were holding this down in Coolidge, Arizona. And we were just talking, and I was sharing with him some of my thoughts, of some of my epiphanies, to which he said, well, geez, you're 33 and you're just getting that now? To which I responded, it's not when you get it, but that you get it.
Yeah, it's not a race.
It's not a race.
Right.
And so I think that's something that we need to keep in mind.
You know, and I think that is a wonderful point because that's the whole point of evolution, I think, is that just like that, those trees, that example, a wonderful example of those trees, is that, you know, we're not supposed to be having this tree perfect by tomorrow.
Right.
Because it is a process of learning and growing. And, you know, one of my, I tend to use a lot of humor in my sessions. And when I have clients complaining that they haven't grown fast enough or haven't changed their lives fast enough, One of the things I throw out there is the idea of that first fish flopping onto land in the whole evolutionary chart.
Mm-hmm.
And I jokingly say, and not so jokingly say, you know, just think how many times that fish had to flop onto land before it decided to stay. And just think about how many millions of years it took for that fish to actually sprout legs or to sprout lungs. And so we can't really expect ourselves to grow overnight, because there's so much we have to learn about and really so much we have to move beyond, which is exactly what that very first fish did. And, you know, going back to the necessity of even the financial crisis, you know, you think about the fires that happened in Yellowstone,
mm-hmm.
what, 25 years ago?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it was so devastating, and everybody was so horrified by it, except for the fact, and very, you know, many fewer people knew this, that actually those particular kinds of trees need fire to help the new cones pop open their seeds to create new growth.
They won't otherwise.
Exactly. And so many times, and also other types of forest fires, that, you know, trees need some fire here and there to clean out the brush underneath them to make room for more growth. So we do have this idea that these devastating kinds of events are actually going to stunt our growth or hurt our growth, but in essence what they do is they create the platform for us to grow even further.
Yeah.
Which is why when we have tough things go on in life, and when, you know, our, quote, tree is struck by lightning, or we have a horrible storm that comes through and shakes us, you know, those are such good opportunities for growth. We just don't always perceive it as such.
Absolutely. We're going to continue our conversation here with Dr. Kelly, Dr. Catherine Kelly, author of Soul Health, in just a few moments. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we're talking with the author of the book Soul Health, and it is Aligning with Spirit for a Radiant Living. Dr. Catherine Kelly is my guest, and is this your first work?
I laugh at this. I said this to someone the other day. This is my first book I finished, but the third one I started.
Well, so, you are fortunate, because I am still working on my first. I haven't published anything yet.
Don't ever stop.
Okay, I won't. Now, I'm curious as to this soul health model, which we started talking about a bit in terms of the tree, the diagram that's on the front. And by the way, my compliments to your graphic designer. He or she came up with I think it's a spectacular design, especially because of the trunk itself in terms of the hands. I think that's a great metaphor. It's a great symbol. And, of course, we go through several of these and the different parts of this tree, if you will. We have the intellectual and occupational. We also have environment, recreational, financial, sexual, social, interpersonal, psychological, spiritual, physical. Those are the various elements, if you will, in the soul model, the soul health model. And, of course, that's obviously broken down throughout the book as you read through it, and you can understand what each of those parts is. I also, I just came across, on page 29, ladies and gentlemen, I just came across the one image of a rather wilted, sad looking, needs water.
Needs more than water. Needs CPR at this point.
Absolutely. The 10 branches of health is what we were talking about. But in this case, this particular tree here is a little anemic, needs some water and sunlight, and needs some TLC. And that really takes us to where we want to go with this, because if we break this down into these 10 different elements, these are the elements of what we need to take a look at in terms of bringing about a certain level of soul health and wellness, correct?
Yes.
So physical, I don't want to say it goes without saying. We kind of know what we need to do there. But in terms of moving through these, but the psychological, how I'm trying to quickly grasp here, how do you separate? And again, we've already mentioned that these are intertwined, so it's not really possible to separate them. But in terms of the way you've done it in these 10 categories, the psychological and spiritual, I want to bring those two together.
Sure.
How do we circumnavigate those?
Well, let me first say that each one of what I've tried to do in the book is actually really open up our ideas of health, period. Because like you said, most people, when we think of health, we go straight to the physical aspect, and then nothing else gets filtered in. And in fact, when we go to the doctor, a lot of times that's the only aspect that is attended to. Even though three-fourths of, and this is some of the research that's out there, that three-fourths of the doctor's visits are basically for psychological reasons, much more than they are for physical reasons, even though they may be manifested through physical symptoms. And so that's one way I want to kind of highlight that, is that whether it's a stress, whether it's a depression, whether it's an anxiety, whether it is just a chronic worry about something, that can manifest in so many different ways into the physical health, as well as impact each and every one of those branches, which is why that interplay between each one of those branches is so complex. And the spiritual, you know, again, I think about this in terms of the research that's out there. Up to 93% of individuals would like to have some sort of spiritual attention during their physician office visits.
Okay, well, what does that mean?
That they would want some, at least their physician, to say something to the effect of, how's your spiritual life? Or, gosh, have you been going to church lately? Have you, you know, what can we do to get you back integrated into a spiritual community? That's all they want, is one little question, because they oftentimes patients feel as if that is a very neglected part of a physical health visit, which is really amazing to me, because like we started the show, it is such an integrated part. And so if someone is not feeling spiritually well, that they have questions and they have concerns about either their belief system, or maybe they're getting sort of conflicting ideas, or maybe they have a different belief system than their friends or partner or family or coworkers or whomever, that is going to have a direct impact on maybe self-esteem. Maybe it's on a stress level because they don't feel like they can talk openly, which, again, we could go down the line, and maybe that kind of stress would impact their social life, would impact their recreational life because they're not hanging out or playing with people that are of like mind or spirit. So really, again, even though that I have all 10 of these branches separated, they are so interconnected. And what the book does, chapter by chapter, is it goes through each branch, but it shows you how they link to the others. And in each chapter, I have a little bit of an assessment, a kind of a questionnaire. And I emphasize not to become overwhelmed as you're going through that process, because really all it is finding one or two things within each one of those branches that might be helpful to improve upon, that is going to positively impact the entire tree, because it is that domino effect.
Hmm.
And so even toward the end of the book, it starts to bring together why working on the whole picture makes sense rather than chopping it up into little parts, like our unfortunate healthcare system seems to do, because it is so disjointed these days.
But I have a question in regards to the folks who in the survey felt that they wanted to have some kind of question in regards to spirituality, or asking how they're doing in that regard. I guess that I need further clarification, because I'm sitting here thinking, I came in here because I had a bruised knee, I broke my arm, or I have a cold, and I'm trying to figure out why I would want to have that kind of interaction. And again, I'm not opposed to that. I guess I'm trying to find the linkage.
Well, and you know, of course, the studies have not illuminated all of the reasons why people want those kinds of questions brought up. But the assumption within the articles is that they're feeling a very distinct separation between mind, body, and spirit when they go to the doctor these days.
Okay.
And they're not wanting that anymore, because I think, although healthcare is chopped up into little bits,
right,
people are not.
I have noticed, too, that there are people who may or may not have legitimate conditions, but they go to the doctor for the interaction, for
the
connection,
social.
The social.
Absolutely.
And they may or may not be hypochondriacs.
Right.
But it's like, and it probably would be more among the elderly.
Absolutely. Yes.
You know.
Yes, a large proportion of the elderly go to the doctor for the social contact. And I have to admit that as a psychologist, a lot of times I have clients come to me that after a while I realize that there's not a whole lot of work they're doing, but that they come because it's one of their only forms of social contact.
And what do you do in that instance?
I actually really do talk to them about, you know, number one, what are you getting out of coming here? And let's talk a little bit about how you might be using this to fulfill the social branch, which you might not be working on outside of session.
And so you actually take the time, which means that your visits are probably more than 5 minutes.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. You know, which is sort of unfortunate in that respect for a lot of folks, because that's the length of their meeting, if that, with their physician. They sit there in the waiting room. They're called into the examining room. They sit there and wait for another 15 minutes or so. Doctor comes in, says, how are you? Good to see you. What's wrong? They look at the chart. They look at the information that was filled out. They examine you a little bit. Okay, here, let me give you this prescription, and then we're going to set you up for surgery or whatever.
Right.
And then they're out the door.
Yeah, and when I worked in the medical schools here, one of the things that was really fascinating to me, because, you know, I was basically there to teach the family practice residents how to spend time with their clients, and yet the system was so not supportive of that. And so one of the things that in the research is that as modern healthcare has evolved, quote, evolved, I'm not sure I would actually use that word, that the visits with physicians have shortened and shortened and shortened. And if you can see the same physician the next time, that's actually a plus, whereas a lot of people, if they call to make an appointment a week later, they can't get in to see the physician, so they have to see an assistant or a PA or someone else. So it's very disjointed. And really that's part of what this book is about, is to re-empower people to start to look at their overall health, their whole health, and going into that deeper level of soul health, because we have to really learn how to do it for ourselves in some ways these days. Because those 7 minutes, if we're lucky, those 7 minute appointments with a physician are not going to cut it. And so this book is really meant to help empower people and help them walk through the process of understanding each one of these aspects of these important aspects of overall health, so that you can become your own advocate. And, you know, later in the book, I have this chapter about becoming a steward to your soul. And that chapter is really all about, again, learning about these branches and being a very proactive participant in your overall health and radiant experience of life, because we're not going to get that in how modern healthcare is set up. And so, and again, research out there is showing that clients and patients want more than what they are receiving within healthcare systems. And so now it's coming back to, we have to start becoming better stewards to ourselves and becoming much more conscious in what each and every one of us needs. So the book is really designed to help walk people through that whole process of becoming that steward and committing to yourself that, you know, you may not be able to do an overhaul overnight like we talked about earlier, but being able to be conscious of how to tweak or improve upon each one of those branches a little bit along the way, you're going to get a lot further than you would in a 7 minute visit.
If you've just joined us, we're talking with author Dr. Catherine Kelly. She has authored the book Soul Health, basically aligning with spirit for radiant living. And I'm curious as to why these particular fields of, I'll use the broad term, medicine, as opposed to cardiology and ophthalmology or something of that nature. Why psychology?
Why psychology? I'm not sure what you're asking.
Why these particular fields? Why did you go into them?
Okay. Gosh, probably because I was so drawn to talking with people. And, you know, from a very early age, I had people coming to me.
Well, usually that leads you into radio. That's how I got into this.
That's probably true. I probably did not take the right route because the schooling was grueling. But, yeah, I mean, I think part of it was, you know, very, in fact, it was my sophomore year in high school. I took an honors psychology class, and within the first week, I was sold. And I just knew that, okay, this is it. This is what feels right to me. And now, granted, I took some detours with the type of psychology because I think I had a lot of my own growing and learning to do to see what might fit for me. But most certainly, you know, the whole talking with people and helping them grow, and I've always been very interested in self-growth and kind of understanding myself and understanding other people. But then the health aspect of it has always been very important. My father had an accident when I was 9 years old that left him medically disabled. And at 9 years old, you know, I was not aware or conscious enough to really understand it all until growing up and looking back and realizing how much of our own, my own, my family's own, and his own human conditions were just, I wouldn't say shattered, that's a little dramatic, but it was definitely very affected and very weathered at times, you know, if we're going to go back to that tree. And I think what was so important to me was watching how much or how little energy he put into his own healing and how much it benefited or hurt him. And so, you know, I think for me that somehow it got planted in me early on that maybe this is a little mission for me is help empower people and help them realize that, you know, those storms that we have to weather are really, again, opportunities for growth if we allow them to be. So I think part of it is having taught in medical schools and kind of watching how little time physicians get to spend with clients. I actually feel very fortunate that I chose the path I did because I am honored and blessed every day when clients come in and get to spend, you know, an hour, well, almost an hour, 45 minutes to an hour with them, really hashing through this stuff and seeing those little light bulbs go on. So to me, I think I lucked out, you know, to some extent.
I would have to say that your patients did as well, because they have somebody who understands. It's like we've all gone through our own stuff as we've grown up, and some of us kind of get, you know, befuddled and stuck in it, and, you know, we have to work our way through it, and others have been able to work through a good portion of it so that then we can kind of look back, this person needs help coming forward,
right.
Sort of getting out of the quicksand. Let me help them out of the quicksand. And that's, I think that's wonderful that you provide that opportunity. I personally went through, I only went to a therapist, an individual therapist, four times. And I'm literally meaning four specific scheduled appointments, consecutive appointments over 4 weeks. And at the end of those 4 weeks, I said, bye-bye. Because I wasn't getting the kind of support and encouragement. I wasn't, and plus the fact that this was recommended by other people. Richard, you should go to therapy. And for some dumb reason, I listened to them. And
went to the wrong person.
I may have.
I don't know.
I may have. And all I know is in the last session, the woman asked me, first of all, to list off all the names of my friends. And 95% of them were women. And apparently she thought that was there was a problem there. And then she began to tell me that I had, her words, character flaws. It was at that point that I said, thank you, but no thank you. Yes, I have issues, as we all do, and I have what I like to call idiosyncrasies.
Good word.
We're all eccentric, if you will, to one level or another, and there's nothing wrong with that because we're all different, which was also befuddling to me as a kid growing up in school because I was taught that not only were we all different as individuals, but boys were different from girls, specifically in terms of how they learned, and that girls learned at an earlier age than boys because boys were full of energy and all of that and had trouble sitting still and so forth. And then as I got out of school, I noticed that they started to normalize the students by giving them drugs. And I thought, wait a minute, but you just told me that we all learn differently. Why
right.
are you doing this to the children?
Right.
I didn't understand that.
Yeah.
My best experiences were in encounter groups.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
Rather than a one-on-one therapy session.
Mm-hmm.
And I went through a number of them in the 80s and 90s. And I have to look back and I have to say they were fabulous, because one of the greatest lessons that I learned, Catherine, was on day one, I began to look around the room and prejudge each person as to whether or not I would associate with them during the next 5 days. And those that I said I didn't want to were the ones I was closest to at the end of the 5 days.
You proved yourself wrong. That's great.
I did.
And so, you know, go ahead. That is something that I go to great length in the book to emphasize. And to me, this is, even though this model talks about 10 key branches, one of the things I go to great effort to do is help people really embrace their uniqueness, because no soul is alike. And just like what you're saying is that I think in our, well, in lots of societies, but particularly in our society, we try to categorize people or lump them all together. And I think that has caused so many difficulties and challenges and really, you know, wilted a lot of people's trees, because they haven't been allowed to just embrace their uniqueness. And so your tree is going to look very different than my tree, and it should, just like every oak tree is going to look a little different. So I think you're making a wonderful point there, is that I think our, our system, or systems, really are part of our human condition's problems.
Yes. And the thing is that we sit here, you and I, and we recognize that.
Yeah.
We see it for what it is, yet we have what seems to be little or no power to change it.
Right.
Or, and this is a question to you, or do we?
Well, I think as an individual, we do. That sounds maybe a little backwards, because we would think that there's strength in numbers. But really what this whole concept of soul health is going back to embracing and understanding yourself, again, at that deep level, because that's the only way any of us really know our true health or our true radiance. And so if each and every one of us were to just embrace who we are and not judge the next tree, I do think we would have a greater effect. But we're such in the pattern of judging and separating ourselves out that if we stay in that thought process that, you know, we have to prove to someone else, that there should be lines separating all of us, I think as long as we create or continue to reinforce that whole idea of separateness, then we are going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
But, you know, later in the book, one of the things that I talk about is that whole idea of, and this came from a conversation from a colleague who also wrote a book. At one point she asked me where we're evolving to.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, and it didn't take much. I said, to oneness. You know, I think if all of us were evolving in our own way, we would actually end up evolving together anyway. But again, what you're saying is that, you know, we still have all these separations or categories and judgments. And but, you know, we all have DNA. We all have, you know, human traits. But it's our psyche or our intellect that tries to separate. But our souls really are all connected.
You know, you raise a very, very interesting point in that in my religious/spiritual upbringing, and the most formidable period was the first 15 years of my broadcast career when I worked for a Christian radio station. The interesting irony was that prior to my working there, and I was not working, I just graduated from high school and spent a couple of semesters in junior college, and my mother suggested that I go work for a religious radio station. But the one thing that I found so interesting was that there was this message that I kept hearing about being perfect. And, of course, the biblical passage, be perfect even as your Father in heaven is perfect. And then you bring this concept of the tree into the equation. And you take a look at all of the trees that are in existence on the planet, which ones are perfect?
Exactly.
And the thing that I found, though, was that when I started to get a little more intellectual and started defining things, I said, okay, wait a minute. In the context of that passage, what does the word perfect mean?
Exactly.
Well, what it doesn't mean is good versus bad, right versus wrong, left versus right, et cetera, et cetera. It means to be complete. And if there was one specific design, perfect design for a tree, then all of the trees would be the same, and we would all be the same.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not.
Mm-hmm. And wouldn't life be boring?
Quite. Quite. So when you begin the process of working with your... And I guess define. Do you prefer they be called patients, clients?
I actually call mine clients because to me it's more of a partnership.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I know there's lots of different approaches. I've got colleagues that do call their what I call clients patients. I think it's all a semantics thing.
Sure. I think it's how you relate to them, regardless of what you call them.
Absolutely.
But when you start working with an individual, maybe for the first time, obviously they're coming to you because they were referred to you, or you were on a list and you were number three, and they'd already been to one and two, and didn't really feel like they were able to get help from them. Do you find that for the most part, when people come to you, you feel that you're able to help just about everyone, or are there those select few that I don't think I'm the right person for you?
You know, I think because of, it's few and far between that I have someone that I don't feel I can help because of the nature of the model. You know, the nature of the model is so comprehensive that they're inevitably going to bring in an issue that fits into each or every one, or one or more, let me say that, one or more of those branches. So it's rare that I don't feel like I can help them, but it's really more of a matter of do they really want to be helped?
Ah.
Because I have had to, quote, fire clients when they really haven't been putting a lot into their work. And I will talk with them for several sessions before I ever, say, look, I'm not sure you're ready for therapy, or I'm not really sure that you're, really ready to put yourself into this. I'll leave it up to you. However, And it's really not so much a matter of me not being able to help them. It's really about, are they ready to be helped?
That's a good point, a very good distinction, and an appropriate one too, because we're all at different levels of learning and growing and evolving.
Absolutely.
And if you're not ready for it, then you shouldn't pursue it, whether it be a particular education. That's why I find it fascinating when I'm here in Santa Barbara, and we have two colleges. Well, we have more than just two colleges, but the two main ones, the City College and UCSB. And I come across many students, and we get to talking every so often, and I often wonder why they're in college.
Right.
Are you really ready for this? Is this really what you want? Or is this what your parents or your peer group back wherever you come from, if not from here, tell you that college is the next logical step?
Right.
Well, I went to junior college for three semesters, and then I found the career that I've been in ever since. I was very fortunate in that respect, I suppose. But I think everyone can be that fortunate if that's really the direction that you want to go. I mean, I don't know. I suppose I could put a PhD behind my name, but I couldn't claim any college gave it to me.
and I think, Richard, the other thing is, even I'm going to throw out some research again. When I was in graduate school, which was quite a while ago, a couple decades ago, I remember in our career counseling class that at the time, and again, I emphasize a couple decades ago because I'm sure it's changed by now, but a couple decades ago, they said that on average, people change careers 3.5 times in their lifetime. Now, that's careers. That's not just jobs. And so going back to this whole idea of soul health and really knowing yourself before you jump into a school path, it, to me, totally makes sense. Now, on the other hand, I think that sometimes people need the process of going through some classes that aren't fitting for them to really learn what they do want.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that knowing your soul to me is a process. And right now, especially with the economic crisis, I have many clients who either have lost their jobs or who have just said, the heck with my workplace, it's a nightmare, I'm getting out of there. And so we have redeveloped, you know, some different career paths out of that. But, you know, you're absolutely right. I mean, a lot of the kids out there right now are sort of, okay, I don't know what else to do, so I'm going to go to college. And especially with these student loan situations that are out there now.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
You know, that's going to create financial health problems. And, you know, we're kind of going down some wrong paths here.
We certainly are. And I find it interesting that there are those who are trying to steer us in a different direction, and in a good way. I'd like to consider myself one of them in that, for example, this interview is available, as you heard at the beginning of the program, two broadcasts on the weekend, and then, of course, on the archive page of the website. I don't charge for that. I don't want to charge for that because this is too important. Someone even said, you need to monetize your website, even if you just charge 99 cents. I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. I don't want any encumbrances, any more than there are on the internet, for people to get this information. It's just too blasted important to hinder its access.
Right.
And that's not to say that that this particular program is all that important. It is important, but I want it to be easily accessible to anyone and everyone.
Yeah, thank you.
And then the other aspect, I mean, you touched upon it in terms of economics and getting an education. And I it's like, okay, it's one thing to go into debt for $60,000 to $100,000 to $200,000 if you're buying a house.
Right.
That's understandable. You can accept and grasp that and put that into its proper context. But you're going to school. And when you get out, you have to get a job in order to start paying back those student loans. Or the other option, from what I understand, is as long as you're in school, you don't have to pay that back. Well, what are you doing? You're just accumulating more and more debt through that process. And that just seems like the wrong message to be sending. That, again, as you've already stated, it creates great financial dis-ease.
Absolutely.
And I think more people are beginning to shift. I think that more people, and I saw this one program where they were actually, I don't want to say encouraging, but they were sort of making strong suggestions that there are other ways of getting the education that you need to fulfill the dreams that you have without putting those dreams in jeopardy.
Sure.
By taking on this giant ball and chain,
mm-hmm.
And so that's very exciting in that respect. But when we talk about some of these things, there are those who have taken on a giant ball and chain that in some cases doesn't even exist except in their own minds.
Mm-hmm.
We could talk about that in terms of, say, relationships. When it comes to relationships, I like to use the tree analogy. I'm going to use the chocolate cake analogy.
Okay, I'd love to hear it.
The chocolate cake analogy is this. You are the chocolate cake, and there's nothing wrong with it. It's absolutely delicious, and someone comes along, sees this chocolate cake, and says, no, I'm not interested. I'm not into chocolate cake today. Does that make the chocolate cake bad? Is there anything wrong with it? Absolutely not. Well, Catherine Kelly, I want to thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Let our listeners know again about the book. The title is Soul Health, Aligning with Spirit for a Radiant Living. Again, Dr. Catherine T. Kelly, and the website is drcatherinekelly.com.
DrCatherineTKelly.com.
The T is in there also. All
yes.
Right. Dr. Catherine T. It is just Catherine T. Kelly.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's under drcatherinekelly.com.
Just Google.
Google it too.
Soul Health as well. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been
a pleasure
having you on, and I hope that we can have you back on when your second book is available.
Absolutely. I will keep you posted.
Wonderful. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, Love Talal.